Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And today I am speaking with Dolly Carter, Managing Director of Energy BBDO. Welcome.
Thanks. Hi, Casey. Thanks for having me.
So can we talk a little bit about your career and how you got your position up until now?
Yeah, also slightly unorthodox path. So I went to college and I studied law, and I was adamant that I wanted to be an entertainment lawyer. And so I went to a school that specialized in entertainment law. And while I did that on the side, I used to do a series of music events. So whether it was working on concerts, this is part-time while I was in college, whether it was working on concerts or like after parties for musicians and celebrities. And so I did that for a long time. And I guess that was a great networking opportunity. And then I got a phone call one day from my cousin who said, hey, EA Sports is looking for somebody who is really connected in the music industry. They're launching this music initiative and they really need somebody with great relationships that can be part of this like roadshow that they're doing. And I'm like, don't know anything about it, but sure, I'll jump in. So I did that and then kind of worked at their agency at the time to help broker some of those relationships and conversations. And the agency was a small marketing firm in London. And I just fell in love. Like, I just loved the moving from like event coordination to just, you know, the advertising side of things, being able to marry that relationship building with the, you know, the more logistical, the more strategic and creative sides of the ad world. And that was it. So I kind of started that as a project to help the brand out. And then I ended up staying at that agency for the next 3 years. And then that kind of firmly planted, you know, my feet in the industry. And then I worked at multiple different agencies. And I think the thing that has always been unique about me is that I have probably touched all different disciplines, whether it's like very traditional or very media centric. And so the thing I learned early on is that I didn't want to just do one thing. Like if there was an opportunity to have strategic conversation, I just wanted to be a part of it, whatever that looked like. And that was kind of it. And then I think the thing that kept me was it was really apparent to me early on that the advertising industry was not a very diverse one. So I was almost always like the solitary woman that looked like me in any of those meetings. And that kind of propelled me to be a part of changing that, like just continuing to stay the course and staying in it while I loved it, but also continuing to be representative of it being a great place for women, women of color, you know, working moms to be. And then I think that that became like a dual charter for me. So yeah, worked in lots of different places throughout the journey, but that's how I got into it in the first place.
There are like three questions I have now based on what you just said. One of the things I wanted to ask is, you know, so this not having agencies that are reflective of the world we live in mm-hmm. has been a huge issue for many, many years. And yet agencies flounder. They can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Do you have any advice for them? Just based on what you were just saying about wanting to change the ratio, do you have any advice? What could they do better?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things. I don't know that the onus is solely on agencies, although like recently, like I've been really, really encouraged, for example, at BBDO, at the like commitment at the leadership level to kind of change and shake up that landscape. It's really encouraging. The reason why I say this onus isn't solely on agencies is because what happens is if you don't see yourself reflected somewhere, it feels like it's a space not for you. And therefore you're there, you don't feel comfortable. And therefore people walk away from it and then choose a career path within advertising that maybe is a little bit more representative, like event, right? And so I think part of it is the thing I told myself early on is like, one, I made a commitment to changing that DNA. So where I have the opportunity, talent, the best talent is the best talent, but the opportunities are less common in places where people don't really do those jobs as often. So I try to make a commitment to, like, whenever we're in any type of situation, like, let's be committed to really trying to change the tapestry. Not because I'm trying to be in an echo chamber, the opposite. None of us should want to be in an echo chamber. We should want to have rich range of diverse experiences, whether that's college educated or you left school to go out to work at 16, whether that's people's ethnicities, whether it's neurodivergence, like, all of those things are critical. So I think it's all of us making a commitment to look past what maybe the tapestry has been and being willing to open that aperture and find people from all different walks of life, because that is critically important in the work that we do. Like, you can't shy away from it. And then I think for people, like, if you get into it and you love it, like, keep going. Like, it is hard to be in places where there aren't a lot of people. You feel like you don't have your tribe or your people around you, but you can be the person that helps the next person that starts to change that landscape. So I would tell people, like, instead of shying away from it, like, push through it and as much as possible and be part of the future that you want to see. I know it sounds a little cliche, but it's really true.
No, it sounds terrific. And I have one more question, because you mentioned that at the beginning of your career, you didn't necessarily know about what you were being asked to do. Yeah. I had an interview recently, a conversation with Louise Story, who just wrote an amazing book, co-wrote it with Ebony Reed. Louise used to be at the Wall Street Journal, where Ebony is, mm-hmm. and also New York Times, very well-known journalist and writer. And she said that throughout her career, when people would ask her to do something, even if she didn't know how to do it, she would say, sure, I'll do it. As she went along, she figured it out. And I find a lot of people, especially women, are first to say, oh, I don't even know if I could do that. I've never done that before. Where, you know, as opposed to just jumping in. Are you a jumping in person? It sounds like you are.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think we've all been victims of our own limitations in life. And anyone who knows me well will say that I am the person who will try anything. Like, and on the flip side, I'm not afraid to, you know, like, fail fast and be like, hey, like, I don't know how to do this thing. But I am a believer, like, the way to solve things is just to try it. And so, yeah, I'm like the ultimate risk taker, but also the ultimate person be like, we'll figure it out. But I have a very calm demeanor that really unsettles people. Because, like, even if you don't know, people are like, why are you not stressed? And I'm like, because we will figure it out. One way, if I can't figure it out, we'll find the figure out person, you know? So yeah, I'm definitely jump in feet first. And I have no qualms about doing something and it not being perfect and raising my hand and let's figure out another way.
I need to spend more time with you. I do not have a calm demeanor. I'll jump in. That part I'll do, but I'll be in it and I'll be like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing here. That's a great way to be. So let's talk a little bit about your role at Energy BBDO.
Yeah. So my role at Energy, obviously I'm the managing director. And it is a really varied role, which is also perfect for my personality type. So I think on one hand, you know, I work closely with a number of our clients, and I really play the role of, like, strategic advisor or partner. I've always really cared about business, like business challenges. And so, like, for me, the excitement is in, like, what's the actual thing you're trying to fix? And then to the point we were just making, figuring out the right path to really solve those challenges. So I'm also, like, honest and direct to a fault, which is a good thing, because I think client relationships are built on authenticity and honesty. And so that's a big part of my role. I also have to lead the agency. So, you know, I know pretty much everybody that works within the agency. I try to lead from a very approachable perspective. We're all human beings and individuals before we are employees. And so just try to really empower people to do the thing that we just talked about, which was fail fast, empower people to try, empower people to step out and realize their own. And I'd say that's a big part of the role that I really love, is just the connectivity with people, mentoring, giving them the platform and the opportunity to develop and grow. And then all of the operational, logistical things, making sure that, you know, we're functioning well financially, making sure that we are committed to creativity and that no matter what we do, like we're putting great work out in the world that's in service of our clients, everyone feels good about. And then just, you know, spending time just mining the business and seeing where we have opportunity as individuals to grow, as an agency to grow, with a real keen eye on the future and understanding like what we could be doing to evolve our agency. And I'd say that BBDO and Energy have really created an amazing platform and landscape for me to be able to do that. Like if you're a person who wants to just learn, discover, grow, and be a part of that evolution, like it's given me the space and place to do that, for which I'm grateful. So.
That's amazing because a lot of people don't feel that all the time about the places that they work. In one of the, in terms of giving you the space to grow and be inspired, I understand that you're quite passionate about travel and photography. And what are some of the best trips that you've been on? And why?
That's a great question. So I feel like my love for travel started at like a young age. I was an only child and what I call like my mom's handbag. She traveled a ton. And so from a very young age, that was like a super unlock. And so I'd say from an early travel perspective, I remember being 5 years old. My cousins had moved to Egypt and spending summers, and I feel like school attendance wasn't a big thing then. I feel like I would go for longer than summers. It would be like half a year in Egypt. And just, I mean, I think it's always interesting that like we're born in a place and your parents kind of determine where home is for you because that's where you're born. I think Egypt and then ironically the US were two places as a child that felt like home truly for me. And that was the first unlock, like, you can go somewhere else that isn't the place that you're conditioned to believe your roots are and really, really feel at home. And so I just loved the freedom of that and probably the fact that I didn't go to school for 6 months and was just, but I really don't think it was a thing. We used to take vacations for like 2 months at a time. And then I'd say in recent years, when I had children, the thing I said was I want to give my children the gift of travel so that they grow up having traveled the world or having experienced different places and different things. But I'd say the most recent, like most magical was that we went to Ghana. So my mom's family originally from Ghana. And so, you know, my husband was like, I want to go to Africa. And I was like, perfect, let's go to Ghana. My mom has a house there. So we went to Ghana and it was just a really magical experience. It's really unique in that there really is like no middle class. There are people who are wealthy and there are people who are not wealthy. And so in one day you have like such a unique range of experiences where you're go through a market and you experience people who basically like this is their daily bread and butter. And then on the other hand, you're in like these palatial mansions. It just feels like a complete disconnect. But then also when you look around, just very rustic and authentic and real. And like you can live amazingly in a place like that. And I don't feel like Africa always gets really well represented, like in the media and stuff. It's just feast or famine and just the aspirational nature of being there that was like completely unexpected was really exciting. And, you know, even my kids like loved it in so many different ways, just being able to, we went to safari, we glamped, you know, we stayed in like beautiful hotels. Like we did it all and it was really amazing.
So how important do you think it is to have those kind of experience, especially in an industry like advertising, where you're both getting inspired, being reminded of different cultures and the world, and also disconnecting from the day-to-day of, you know, being on 24/7?
Yeah, I think it's so important. I think the inspiration piece, you sit in a room so often and you bounce off ideas, and the ideas are often reflective of just our individual experiences. And I think it's important to step outside of the rooms into the world and remember like our opinion of another place or another experience is an opinion. I think you have to live it and breathe it in the same way that like when we talk about like Gen Z, I'm not Gen Z, I'm a millennial. And therefore I can't, you know, I have a Gen Z child, but I can't firmly be their representative. I think it's important to be amongst those people and in different spaces to absorb those perspectives and, more importantly, experiences. Like, you know, we're glued to our phone, and it's so easy for our experiences to be lived through a screen. I think getting out and touching is critical. As far as disconnecting, the thing that makes me most sad, not just about advertising, but just about the world period, is just our inability to disconnect, right? It's like a gift and a curse, and I'm guilty of it as much as the next person. I always tell people, though, like when it comes to the weekends, I'm like, I work hard, but like I weekend hard, like, you know. And I joke with my team, they're like, what are you doing soon? I'm like, I'm going to be out in these streets. And they're like, doing what? And I think it's really important to have a counterbalance and to have the ability to disconnect. Like, no one wins any awards for being on 24/7. Like, there was a thing I saw last year, and I have not been able to, like, I replay it back to my team all the time. It was like, no one is going to remember that you worked all those hours and the weekends and all of those things, except for your family. Like, they're going to be the people that miss out on the experiences. The people that you work with, like, they were like, yeah, she was great, but they're not going to remember, like, that night she stayed until midnight and she wasn't able to switch off and she was there again at 3 o'clock. No one's going to care. The people who missed out on time and experience with you, they're the people that are going to care. And so, like, anytime I feel myself getting, like, over, like, I remind myself of that, like, do your job and be effective, but remember what's important, you know, outside of that. And the balance is key.
I think that makes so much sense. And I try to remind myself of that as well. But what does that mean for you when you're on vacation, or even just when it's night and you, you know, put your kids to bed or whatever mm-hmm. you're going to do? Are you on your phone? Are you answering emails? Do you give, you know, how do you handle it as a leader?
Yes. Great question. So it varies, in like full transparency. I am better now at the evening being the evening. And I think I typically will have a conscious eye. Like, if something comes through and it's like SOS, I'll respond to it. But a lot of the time, if things come through that don't feel like huge emergencies, I think it's okay for me to just respond to it in the morning. You know, I think that's okay. And then within the agency, we really try to implement, like, just because somebody emails you, like, after 7 o'clock, you have no obligation to respond to any emails that come through. Like, if you need to mute your notifications or do whatever you need to do to protect your personal space, that's important. You should absolutely do that. If there is an emergency, I will alert you that there's an upcoming emergency before that time. And there will be occasions where I'm like, hey, I need you to be on tonight because we're dealing with this thing that's due, you know, this thing that has to be delivered in the morning. But we've tried to say to people, like, there's no obligation. If an email comes through from me, in fact, a lot of the time I will send an email and say, please do not respond to this until Monday, or please do not be under obligation, because the time I can find to catch up on work, like, I might be in meetings all day. And therefore, I might only have the opportunity to work a couple of hours in the evening. I try to do a better job of, like, setting my emails to go out after work begins. But certainly if I don't, I will send and be like, please don't feel like you have to please don't respond to this, actually, and respond to it tomorrow. I was just telling my husband yesterday, I'm doing a horrible job lately of disconnecting. And so we talked about we should try and just throw our phones at the door, like, at a certain time, and just leave them there. And just be present. I have a coach, and that's one thing we talk about a lot, like, being present in the present. So I talk a good game, and I try to tell my team that. I don't know if I always model it well, but I certainly make a point of letting them know. For example, if they're on vacation, there's not a single circumstance where I'm going to message anyone on my team. I'm like, if the building burns, it will burn. I'm not contacting you. And I stand by that. So, you know, I try to make sure that they know that they have time and it isn't just a run on of work.
That's fantastic. And I try to do that too with the people mm-hmm. that with me. For somebody that doesn't have such a fabulous leader as you, who may not be in a position where they feel that they're not obligated to answer emails, especially if it's the weekend or night, do you have any advice for them about a way that they can sort of set boundaries while still being respectful?
That's a really great question. I think boundaries are the biggest barrier in the workplace. And I think it's hard, to your point, like if you don't feel comfortable or confident or you're scared about the position in your role. I'm a talker, so I would always encourage somebody to have open conversation with their boss or their leader and just be like, hey, whatever your sin, I don't feel like you should have to justify why after hours you're not available. But I think people have to have a willingness to either have a conversation and just be like, ideally, I will be online as soon as possible, or, you know, I'm available to respond to this in the morning, or start by responding and be like, thanks for sending this. I will get back to you in the morning. So they're gently setting boundaries. I also think it's okay. And there's some circumstances where you can just jump on in the morning and be like, hey, saw your email this morning. Because I think you quickly, as a boss, also filter through the people who are with it and the people who are not. And I respect all of it. Like, you know, like there are people who are willing to work after hours, and there are people who just by their failure to respond, let me know that they start work at the beginning of the working day. And I think the onus is on each of us to set our own boundaries that feel most comfortable to us. But I also think the leaders also need to be respectful when people set those boundaries, not to try and push them and be like, okay, well, let me test. And to the point I made, if there's a scenario where you really need to speak to somebody, then there will be exceptions. You can do that. So I just say communicate, use your voice, and try to communicate what you need, manage upwards as much as possible. And yeah, just try to be upfront. I really respect it when people are upfront.
And I suppose, although this might sound very dated of me, if it's really an emergency, someone could always call you.
Exactly. But that's my thing. That's my point. Like, if it's an emergency, I will ring your phone. If I'm not calling you, it's not an emergency, you know, and that's the reality of it. And we code things as emergencies that aren't emergencies at all. And that creates a heightened state of anxiety. So
that goes back to, in my mind, to what you were saying before about people aren't going to remember. You know, someone said to me the other day, there was something that was happening with one of our clients that felt very like imminent and worrying and needed to be solved right that second. But in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't really a big deal for them, and it wasn't a big deal for us. Right. And I was getting myself like in knots over it. And I think Leslie, who's my partner, my work partner, said to me like, you know, this isn't going to matter. Just we need to deal with it. Not saying don't deal with it, but like take your emotional angst elsewhere.
Yes. Well, because like half of our reaction to things, half of the way we respond to things is just sheer reaction, right? And like, then you're operating from a position of like panic, defense, fear, none of which are going to yield like a great outcome. That I learned that when I used to go to clubbing. Bear with me, there's a club theme here. But when I was in my teens, because you know we can go to the club a lot earlier, I used to get panicked. Like my friends would be like, we're on the way to pick you up. I'm like, I'm not ready, my hair's not done. And then I'd almost always be even later because I was like getting ready in a frenzy and a panic. And then I learned to just be like, all right, well, this is going to take me as long as it takes to get ready, but I'm going to put my makeup on properly and I'm going to get dressed properly. And 99% of the time I would be done early. And so that's when I figured out like operating from a state of panic, like yields the absolute opposite outcome to what you're looking for. So yeah, no, I don't panic often. I mean, I might be like annoyed, but I don't panic.
Clubbing, what I'm hearing here is that it played a very important role in your life in different ways.
Very formative of my psyche, for sure.
So just to end, is there one piece of advice that has really helped you through your life and your career that you could please share with us?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I was told was do not look around you to find things or people to compete with. Just look within and it will be clear to you what you should be doing. And it's interesting because as an only child, like that's really rung true with me. There was no competitiveness in my house because there was no one to compete against. So the person that I was always trying to better was myself, right? Like, how am I a better me tomorrow than I was the day before? And I think that, you know, in the workplace specifically, that, you know, people get in, you know, embroiled in things like politics and looking around at peers and, well, this peer's doing that and I should be doing that. And I think the best thing I can tell people is just stay focused and committed to you, yourself and your journey, and focused on being a better student of your craft, a better employee, a better peer, a better partner, a better friend. And I promise you, you'll be amazed, like, when you look back to see how far you've propelled yourself, further than if your motivation is someone else. And so that's just always rung true to me. So I've never, from a career perspective, been like, oh, my peers are doing this, I've got to be doing that. But somehow I've ended up right where I was intended to be. And that's just like a relentless focus on just being better and improving and learning and growing, you know, along the way.
Thank you. That's such a perfect place to end. It was an absolute pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much.